Happy Daylight Savings Weekend, everybody. These are my people. You all slept in, all right? It's good to see you. I want to welcome all of our guests and first-time visitors at all of our campuses. I want to say hello to North, Downtown, West, anybody tuning in online or Facebook Live. So good to have you. I want to welcome you here at our Northwest campus, and in fact, at all of our campuses. Let's just put our hands together, make it a warm place. Good to have you. We are today finishing up this four-week series of messages that we have been in called Slip of the Tongue, and I don't know how you feel about that. Some of you might think, wow, that went by fast. This was maybe the best sermon series I've ever heard you give, Aaron. I mean, I'm just guessing, all right? Just articulating what I'm sure is running through your mind. Others of you, maybe you're thinking it's about time, all right? This has been challenging and grueling, sort of like a four-week root canal. Kind of ready for this to be over with, and if that's you, I would be kind of with you as well, because preparing and delivering a message series on the power of our words is hard to do. It's brought this issue up front and center in my own life, and it's caused me to think at times, like, if I wasn't preaching on this, would I be watching my tongue as much as I have? For example, last Sunday after church, our family went out to lunch. We went to one of our favorite Indian food restaurants, and we had a great meal, and we're headed home, and it's a beautiful sunny afternoon, and we get about 10 minutes into our drive home, and my 13-year-old daughter, Campbell, who's very, very responsible, she's just amazing, but she gasps from the back seat, and she goes, "Oh, no," and we're like, "What?" And she goes, "I left my retainer back at the restaurant," and I'm like, "Well, where'd you leave it?" And she said, "Well, I wrapped it up in a napkin." Oh, yeah. And I remembered then that I had, like, taken all the napkins, all the trash off the table, thrown it in the trash can. So I know it's in the trash. And so immediately, like, I'm like, upset, kind of been out of shape. We turn the car around. We get back to the restaurant, walk inside, explain the situation to them. The two guys behind the counter just sort of look at each other, like, ugh. Like, and so they walk over to the trash can. They pull it out, and we start rummaging through the trash at this Indian food restaurant. It looked a little bit like this. I didn't have time to take a picture. That actually looks way better, really. But there was, like, lots of sauces and syrups and all this kind of junk. And you're just sitting there like, it's like, this is the last thing I want to be doing on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. And I didn't necessarily form my frustrated thoughts into destructive words, but I didn't really have to because my body language sort of said it all. You know what I'm talking about? And this thought convicted me. Like, I never really, like, said anything that I would regret, but I was startled at how quickly those words were coming to the tip of my tongue. And I thought this to myself, if I hadn't have just preached on it three times, would I be refraining? Man, that's convicting. See, I've still got some work to do. I'm sure that you do as well. Here's the reality. Last week, we read out of the book of James and said nobody can tame the tongue. And there was a part of me that thought, well, you know, I mean, I think I can tame the tongue most of the time. It's just that when you hurt me, anger me, annoy me, or stress me out, then I have a hard time taming the tongue. But the reality is that life doesn't work that way. Circumstances are unpredictable. Life gets messy. 13-year-old girls are going to leave their retainer at Indian food restaurants. Stuff like that is just going to happen. But it's in the unguarded moments when you don't have time to think. Remember the acronym that I gave you last week at the end of the service? When we don't have time to kind of run through all those things, that we can slip and say things that really, and here's the word for it, they hurt. They hurt. I was doing some reading this last week from a guy named Dr. Matthew Lieberman. He's a neuroscientist. I was brushing up on my neuroscience. And Dr. Lieberman was actually talking about our tendency to use the physical pain descriptors that we use that to describe the emotional pain that we feel. So, for example, like when somebody says, "Hey, she really broke my heart," or "He really hurt my feelings," or those words, like when you said that to me, it felt like a punch in the gut, if you've ever said anything like that. We use this physical terminology to describe our emotional state, our emotional feelings. And Dr. Lieberman, in his book called Social, he actually says this. He says, to your brain, a broken heart feels a whole lot like a broken leg. Looking at the brain scan side by side without knowing which was an analysis of physical pain and which was an analysis of social pain, you wouldn't have been able to tell the difference. When human beings experience threats or damage to their social bonds, the brain responds the same way it responds to physical pain. It's this idea that, like, ouch, that really hurts. And long before the field of neuroscience would reveal this to us. The Bible gives us this wisdom thousands of years ago from Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21. Words kill and words give life. They're either poison or fruit. You choose. And so all series long, we've been learning together that our words have more of an impact than what we oftentimes maybe intend, or often times what we necessarily mean. And when we have a slip of the tongue, we might say, oh man, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. And that might be true, but once those words are out there, they're out there. And the Bible says that they come from somewhere. The Bible says they come out of the overflow of the heart. Really tells us what's going on in there. And so as we conclude this series, what I want us to really see is that controlling our tongues is not just evidence of spiritual maturity and emotional maturity, but it's actually the means to those things. And so as a church, we've been committing to memory this verse right here. So let's, one last time at all of our campuses, let's say it out loud together. Take control of what I say, O Lord, and guard my lips, Psalm 141:3. Take control of what I say and guard my lips. Now, as we conclude, I want to focus on this first part here, this take control of what I say part, because so far in this series, we've spent the majority of our time talking about the things that we shouldn't say, the things that are painful and destructive and all that. We've even briefly mentioned the things that are positive and encouraging that we know we need to say, but maybe sometimes we don't say, or we need to hear from somebody, but they never say it. So things like, I love you, and I'm proud of you, and I believe in you, those things. But what I want to talk about today is a little bit different. I want to talk about the things that we need to say, we need to articulate, but we oftentimes hold back from saying it because these things are hard to say, even though they may be true. So I got a question for you. At all of our campuses, how do these words right here make you feel? Like when somebody walks up to you and they say, hey man, we need to talk. What's getting ready to happen? Like, good news or bad news, right? Like, I've never heard this. Hey man, we need to talk. We're going to Disneyland. I mean, like, that never happens, right? It's like, hey man, we need to talk. You're amazing. I mean, that would be great, but that never happens. Whenever somebody says this, what's getting ready to happen is something that's going to be hard to hear, right? Something that's going to be difficult and something that's going to be challenging. And see, sometimes if it's with an acquaintance, if it's somebody that you don't have a whole lot relationally invested with, this isn't such a big deal, no skin off your back. But when it's somebody you really love and care about, when it's somebody you respect, when it's somebody whose relationship you really desire, and they say this to you or you say this to them, then there's all of a sudden the stakes go up significantly. And there's a lot at risk. And if this conversation goes wrong, which many times it does, we're going to talk about some of the minds that we can step on as we try to have this very difficult conversation, then maybe the relationship falls apart. Or maybe there's this tension that ends up happening. Feelings get hurt or worse. But see, here's the reality, is that oftentimes the healthiest thing that we can say is oftentimes the hardest thing to hear. The healthiest thing that we could say to someone, the healthiest thing that they might say to us, may be the hardest thing to hear because it requires a confrontation of some kind. And so because of this, many of us, we are tempted to just sort of sweep it under the rug, maybe kick the can down the road, say, I know I need to say this, but I don't really want to. I don't want to hurt their feelings. I don't want to make a big to-do out of it. So we just sort of keep it to ourselves. Maybe we drop some hints. Maybe we hope it works itself out on its own. But Psalm 141, verse 3 says, take control of what? What I say. It doesn't say, hey, God, help me to just keep my mouth shut. But there are times when I need to articulate something. I need to speak truth, but that truth is going to be difficult to hear. So here's the question that I want to examine, I want to unpack it for us today in our final week, and that's just simply this. And by the way, if you want to take out your phone and take a picture of the screen, if there's any principles or applications that pop up so you can take it and take it with you, you're free to do that. But here's the question. When and how should we have that difficult conversation? When should we have it, and how should we have it? So with a girlfriend or boyfriend, with a roommate, with a friend, with a child, with your spouse, with an employee or a boss, when and how should we have that difficult conversation? You know the one. One where you notice that your roommate might be having too much to drink too often and they don't seem to think there's a problem. The one where your buddy is spending way too much time on the road in a hotel rooms by himself and not enough time with his family. And you know, honestly, he may not even be doing anything wrong. You have no proof, but it just doesn't feel good to you. And so you wonder, should I say something or should I not? When your friend appears to be developing an emotional infatuation with a married man. Nothing's gotten physical, but there's been some looks, there's been some things said, there's been some flirtation that just makes you nervous. When a discussion in your group just constantly veers over into gossip. When an employee just isn't cutting it, and they're actually pinning the blame on other people. When someone that you care about is developing a destructive addiction and they don't want to face it. Man, on and on and on we could go. You could probably come up with some examples of your own. You could probably think of some examples that you're facing right now. And in the midst of those circumstances, we're faced with a decision. We can look the other way, and we can hope that it'll just work itself out. Let's just not say anything. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to come across the wrong way. Or we can choose to have that difficult conversation. So let me define what I mean by a difficult conversation. Difficult conversation would fall within these parameters. Hey, this is not going to be easy for me to say, and it won't be easy for you to hear. And this first part has to be true. Like, if it's too easy for you to say, and what I mean by that is, like, you're eager to say it, then chances are you're probably going to do it wrong. But, like, though this is not easy for me to say, I'm agonizing over this. I don't want to say it because it's really, really hard, and I know that it's going to be hard for you to hear, which is why it's hard for me to say. But because I love you and because I care about you, then we need to talk. Because what we risk by not saying anything is greater than what we risk by saying something. Now, here's the thing that we all have to understand. In healthy relationships of any kind, this right here is two-way. It's not one-way. Right? So some of us have been in that kind of relationship before where the other person was more than willing to tell us what they think and to speak into our lives and to offer their opinion, but they never wanted to receive it. Yeah, don't look at the person sitting next to you right now, all right? So very, very tense, all right? So yeah, we've all been there before. This does not mean that somebody has achieved a level of spiritual authority and emotional maturity that they just constantly offer their opinions to other people, but it's two-way. And actually, by learning the principles and the guidelines for how to deliver a conversation like this, we should be a better receiver of it. So examples of difficult conversations and how to have them, it's actually a big theme of the Bible. We see it all over the Bible. In the Old Testament, God would send prophets to speak truth into people's lives. And oftentimes they didn't want to hear it. In the New Testament, much of the letters that we have, they're called epistles. These are letters to churches. And it's mostly like guys like James and John and Peter and Paul, they're saying really, really hard things to people that need to hear it. And this is what Paul does in his letter to the Christians that are gathered in Ephesus. And the whole theme of the book of Ephesians is that he wants them to grow in character and he wants them to mature in their faith. And so we need to understand that our salvation is not based upon the daily decisions that we make in our lives. Our salvation is based upon Jesus' finished work on the cross. And so now God declares who we now are in him. We're saved by grace through faith. And you're a child of God. But now this actually frees us up. This is actually the starting line to begin to lean in and to grow and to mature, which will always require a confrontation of some kind from some other people, because as we're going to get to here in a minute, we just don't see everything about ourselves that other people can see. And realizing that this is a relational minefield, Paul kind of sets the table for these conversations. This is what he says in Ephesians 4, starting in verse 2. He says, we need to always be humble and gentle, be patient. And I really want you to notice those three words. That's what he leads with. He says, hey, we need to be humble, we need to be gentle, we need to be patient with each other. This is two-way, not one-way. Making allowance for each other's faults because of your love. No, nobody's perfect. We're all sinners saved by grace, and so we need to give each other the benefit of the doubt. Make every effort to keep yourselves united in the Spirit, binding yourselves together with peace. For there is one body and one Spirit, just as you have been called to one glorious hope for the future. So the whole reason why Paul even writes this is because of this right here. Conflict is inevitable. And there is clearly conflict. That's why he is writing this. That's why there was a need for humility and patience and peace, because there was obviously some sort of conflict that they were dealing with. There's just no escaping conflict in life. Personalities clash, expectations aren't met, misunderstandings are common, personal boundaries get broken, people will hurt you, and you will hurt others, whether it's intentional or not. You can't live your life trying to dodge conflict. And you can't live your life constantly trying to seek it out. You do one of those things, then you're going to burn your relationships to the ground. Now, here's the thing, though, is that oftentimes the way in which we deal with conflict is the way it's been modeled to us. So just for a second, think about your family of origin. Think about the house that you grew up in. However that looked, how was conflict dealt with? And just think about that for a minute. And most of the time, the way in which conflict was dealt with when you were growing up, you inherited some things about the way in which you now deal with it. So maybe some of you grew up in a household that, there was never any conflict. You never saw your mom and dad fight. They constantly swept stuff under the rug. Everything was Pollyanna and roses, and it was just great, but it really wasn't great. There was some stuff underneath the surface that ended up rising to the surface in an unhealthy way later. Or maybe you grew up in a household where your family had no problem with conflict. They would just blow their top, yell and scream and throw things, and that's kind of how you chose to deal with conflict. Here's what I want us to see, is that conflict in and of itself is not bad. It's the way we choose to deal with the conflict that's good or bad. Conflict is not the enemy. Conflict is going to happen regardless, all right? Healthy relationships are going to experience conflict. So can I say this, is that just because there's conflict in your marriage doesn't mean you married the wrong person. Sometimes people come to me and say, I think I married the wrong person. Well, why do you think that? Because we had a fight. Wow. Okay, the first of many, all right? So just because you have a conflict in your marriage doesn't mean you married the wrong person. Just because you have a conflict with your kids doesn't mean you're a bad parent. Just because you have a conflict with your friends doesn't mean you're a bad friend. Just because there's a conflict at work, it doesn't mean that your work culture is toxic. Just because there's a conflict at church doesn't mean you need to run and find another church. It's not the conflict that's the problem. It's the way we choose to handle the conflict that will either be unhealthy or healthy. And so Paul goes on to say, now that that table's been set with humility and gentleness and patience, here it is. He says in chapter 4, verse 15, we will, let's say it out loud together, all of our campuses, speak the truth in love. Yeah, that's it. Like, that's how we have healthy conflict, was we don't back away from the truth. We see truth objectively, not subjectively, but we are going to do it in love, which means I care more for you than I care about winning this argument. I care more for you than winning a debate. And the result will be growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. That's the goal of conflict, is that we would speak the truth in love and that we would grow to look more and more like Jesus. He says, when there's an issue, when there's a conflict, we've got an option. We can look the other way and refuse to speak the truth, or we might end up speaking the truth, but we do it abrasively. We do it out of anger. We do it out of bitterness. We do it out of self-righteous indignation. But there's a better way. We can speak the truth in love. And we have to be willing to receive this as well. I'm currently reading a book right now. I'd highly recommend you check it out if you're looking for something to read. But it's called Thanks for the Feedback. And the subtitle is The Art and the Science of Receiving Feedback Well. And I love the ongoing subtitle from it. It says, thanks for the feedback. Here's the little paragraph underneath it. Even when it is off base, unfair, poorly delivered, and frankly, I'm not in the mood. And I thought, you know what? That's all the reasons why I choose to dismiss your feedback. Like, somebody comes and they give me feedback, and I'm like, you know what? That's off base. You don't know what you're talking about. That's unfair. You're not seeing things from my perspective. That might have been right, but that was really, really poorly delivered. You need to learn some tact. You're like a bull in a china closet. Frankly, you might even be right. I don't even care. I'm not in the mood, right? Like, I've used all those to just sort of dismiss somebody's feedback. And the book goes on to say that the reason why some of us just can't receive feedback is because we sort of, like, our performance or our appearance or our success, we've sort of, like, that's like our identity. And don't mess with my identity. Don't mess with my sense of self-worth. Because so when you say something to me, it's like I just shatter over that. And I'm not willing to receive it. I throw up all these defenses. Fight or flight. I'm going to fight you over that, or I'm just going to run from the relationship. I just can't handle it. And he says, people that receive feedback well and prosper from it are the ones that separate their performance and their appearance from their identity. And they realize, no, okay, that's not my identity. That's just like what I do and who I am over here. This is who God says I am now in Jesus. This is my identity, and that's fixed. It's secure. And I'm growing. And I know that I'm not perfect, and I know that I have issues, and so thank you for the feedback, whether it's off base, unfair, or poorly delivered, because I'll eat the fish and spit out the bones. Thank you for that. I'm in process, making progress. We all need to be open and receptive to that. Paul says this, conflict, when appropriately dealt with, can be the greatest catalyst for trust and intimacy in any relationship, including your relationship with God. That what will end up happening is somebody is able to give you this feedback, and the way that you end up receiving it and what you do with it, this could actually improve the relationship. I've found that oftentimes it is the season immediately following a, hey, Aaron, we need to talk moment, in which the person saying this to me speaks the truth in love. They have my best interests in mind. And I'm humble enough and vulnerable enough and open enough to hear it that actually the relationship goes to new levels of intimacy and trust. But it's hard. Why? Well, for starters, every single one of us have blind spots. Our son is getting ready to turn 16 here in a few months, and so he has his driver's permit, so we've been getting hours with him in the car, and we've been talking to him a lot about blind spots, both in the car and otherwise. But you know what a blind spot is. Like, well, you're in the driver's seat, and you could be a very, very responsible driver. Know what you're very aware, you know, hands at 10 and 2 or whatever. But yet, over your shoulder, like, you've got this, like, spot you can't see, right? It's just a blind spot. Now when the passenger says, hey, there's something in your blind spot, you shouldn't get offended by that. Right? That doesn't mean that you're an irresponsible driver or a bad driver. It doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong. It just simply means there's a blind spot and they're speaking up to help you out. And what we know to be true when it comes to being behind the wheel of a car, we oftentimes fail to see behind the wheel of our lives. So somebody just points out a blind spot. That's all they're doing. They're not saying you're doing anything wrong. They're not saying you're doing anything irresponsible or illegal. It's just a blind spot. And 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 4 says that one of the effects of sin in all of our lives is that it blinds us. In fact, it's worse than that. Sin will cause you and me to look at something good and go, that's bad, or to look at something bad and go, that's good. Sin blinds us and sin confuses us, and so not only do we need the Holy Spirit, not only do we need God's word, but God will also speak through others around us who love and care for us to help us see some things that maybe we can't see. This is actually a command. Like in the Old Testament book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel is a prophet. God calls him to say some hard things to the nation of Israel. Look at what it says in chapter 33, verse 6. He's referring to the watchman is kind of another phrase for a prophet or somebody who will speak the truth. It says, but if the watchman sees the enemy coming and doesn't sound the alarm to warn the people, he is responsible for their captivity. They will die in their sins, but I will hold the who responsible? The watchman? That hardly seems fair. How about the enemy? Like the enemy should own some of this, or maybe the people themselves, they should be a little more responsible. But he says, no, the watchman, I'm going to hold him responsible for their deaths. Why? Because the watchman can see some things that they couldn't see. And God says, hey, I need you to be those that you love. I need you to, in a sense, to be their watchman. Now, that doesn't mean you're a know-it-all. That doesn't mean that you know more than them. That doesn't mean that you should be abrasive. That just means that you speak the truth in love. And just as you do this for them, they're going to do it for you. Paul says we do this for each other. So can I ask you this question? And I realize that it's probably not going to be a fun question for you to want to answer. And you don't need to answer me. I don't need to know this. I just want you to take this question for you. When was the last time that someone pointed out something in your life that you couldn't see but needed to? Now, that question isn't for your spouse. It's not for the person sitting next to you or behind you. This question is for you and it's for me. When was the last time that we allowed somebody to speak truth into our lives? Something that we needed to see, but we couldn't see. Now, if it's been a while, then why is that? And if it's been a while for me, I don't necessarily like the answer to that question. Because if somebody's not saying something that's hard for me to hear, It's not because I've like achieved this like level of like perfection now. Like wow, I'm just living, I'm killing it right now. Like I am making all the right decisions. My behavior is perfectly acceptable. It's all great, great. And so nobody can find anything about me, right? It's just amazing. Or they see it, they just don't want to tell you. And like, what's worse? And so if somebody, it's been a while since somebody sat down and said, hey man, we need to talk. I need to speak some truth into your life and love. Is it because the last time they did that, you bit their head off? Is it because the last time they did that, you got really defensive? Is it because they did that, you cut the relationship off? Then chances are they're probably not going to come back to you again. Now listen, I know the pushback. I have used all of the pushback. And the pushback here is, well, that happened one time. I let somebody speak truth into my life, and they were mean, and they were judgmental, and it really hurt my feelings, and it wasn't handled well, and they embarrassed me. Maybe this is the reason why some of you left your last church. Maybe in the name of church discipline, it wasn't handled well, it was fumbled, and they embarrassed you publicly, they shamed you, they came to some conclusions prematurely, they sided with the other person, and you just felt hung out to dry, and it was brutal. And listen, I know those things happen. That's why this is so challenging. I know that this can be messed up really easily. And if, by the way, if that happens to be you, and if you came to this church because you're like, well, that's a big church, and I like the anonymity of a big church because I've been known by other people and it just got me hurt. Can I just say, I'm glad that you're here. Take all the time that you need to heal. I totally understand. But with that said, I would say you can't stay there forever. You can't just stay in isolation forever. I mean, at some point, you're going to have to be known by other people. And so can I just ask you right now, who have you invited? By the way, this doesn't mean that you're just like an open book, right? Like you don't just like post it on social media. I'm going to be at Starbucks tomorrow at 10 a.m. Anybody who wants to just come speak truth into my life, just come and come one, come all, right? Just welcome it. Now, that's not what I'm talking about. Believe me, I have a long, 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 long line of people that want to speak stuff into my life, and I can't do that. Not because I don't want to hear it, not because I wouldn't be benefited by it, but it would overwhelm me. So I have to be disciplined enough to say, okay, who do I love and trust? Who do I see that loves Jesus, loves me? Who do I have in my life that won't just agree with me on everything? Who do I have in my life that's not afraid to tell me the truth in love, but I know that they have no agenda, and I need to go to them intentionally and invite them and give them permission to speak truth into my life. So who have you invited in? So in the remainder of our time, let me just give six really practical applications. This is what you can take a few pictures of. How can we do this in such a way that helps rather than hurts? First thing is just simply this. Go to the person directly. Go to them directly. So if there's an issue, if they hurt your feelings, if they're doing some stuff that you feel like you need to ask them about, go to them directly. Now, oftentimes, our immediate impulse, I'm including myself in this because I've done this a whole bunch. Instead of going to the person directly, what do? We go to maybe a mutual friend and we say, hey, man, and we share it with them. Why? To get our feelings validated. I want you to validate my feelings first, and then maybe I'll think about going to them directly. And that actually morphs right into gossip, super easy. So Jesus would say, Matthew chapter 18, he would say, if another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. And if the other person listens and confesses it, you have won that person back. Now, you didn't win the argument or the debate, you won the person, which means that actually the relationship is thriving because of it. Now, Jesus seems to indicate here that they may not actually be receptive. And that's whenever he gives us steps 2 and 3, go with someone else, then finally bring it before the church. And see, oftentimes, if you sin against me, I sort of like wait for you to come to me and to feel bad before we can make it right. But Jesus puts the onus on us. He says, no, you need to go. And this requires what we just talked about here. It requires a conversation. And in our society and in our culture, we don't do conversations very well anymore, if we ever have. Because what we've done is we've traded conversation for what? A comment. We don't have conversations anymore. We just like make comments, right? We just drop stuff. I just want to share my opinion here. This is purely my opinion, even though it's the right one. The comment section online is like the toilet bowl of human interaction. Every now and then, like, it's not even like my picture on Instagram. It's not even anything I'm doing. I'll just like go down and just see what people comment about. And my heart breaks. I don't even know the people. I'm like, how could you say that? Like, how could you just like throw that out there? We get super courageous behind a keyboard in the anonymity of that void of relationship and just say whatever. And it wounds people deeply. And so one of the things that I've found, it doesn't happen very often, but occasionally I'll just get an email that's just a doozy. Like, it just comes in like a hand grenade and you're just like, whoa. And I'm like, I'm not responding to that via keyboard. And I'll just pick up the phone and call the person. And 100% of the time, and I know somebody will probably challenge me on that this week, but 100% of the time, every time I call that person, the tone is way, way different. They back down. They're not as harsh. Because we say things, because we just drop a comment. The fine art of conversation is much, much different. And so we need to have a conversation, not a cage match. Here's the second thing, is be clear about your motivation. The other person needs to know, right? So when you say, hey man, we need to talk, and you sit down, don't circle the runway for 20 minutes. Just get right to the point and just share it compassionately with them. Paul models this so well in his letter to the church in Corinth. There were a lot of messes in that first church, which is what prompts him to write 1 Corinthians. And before he says the hard thing, he reminds them over again how much he cares. And so he says in chapter 4, verse 14, he says, hey, I want you to be clear. I'm getting ready to say some tough stuff, but I'm not writing these things to shame you, but to warn you as my beloved children. In other words, this isn't going to be easy for me to say. It's not going to be easy for you to hear. I'm not doing this to make you feel bad or to kick you when you're down. I'm doing this because I love you. And don't have the conversation if this isn't true first. And so just check your motives and say, okay, why do I feel the need to have this conversation? Is it because I need to cut this person down to size because I think they're getting too big for the britches? Is it because I'm jealous of them? Is it because I envy them? Is it because I'm gloating? I'll gloat over their discomfort. Then those are all red flags. This should be done with a heavy heart and huge doses of humility. The third thing is pay attention to your tone. Pay attention. You can say the right thing, you can speak truth and have the wrong tone, and it just they won't be heard. It won't be listened to. And here's the cycle that we oftentimes fall into, is that we know we need to speak the truth, but we don't want to hurt the other person's feelings, and so we refrain from saying anything. And then a line gets crossed and you get offended, and then all of a sudden your emotions kick in and you get angry with the other person. And so now it's really hard to have a conversation where you speak the truth in love. And so what ends up happening is you go from, well, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to hurt their feelings. And then it goes to, well, I'm going to say something and it better hurt their feelings. Because now our emotions have gotten involved. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 1 says, a gentle answer deflects anger, but man, harsh words, they make tempers flare. And the best way to establish your tone is just simply this. It's just let them see your heart. Let them see your heart. They need to know. They need to know you. They need to know why you're sitting down to share this with them. And so that requires some vulnerability on your part. A good friend of mine, he's a teaching pastor at a large church in Kentucky. His name's Scott. He was telling us several years ago that a group of guys in the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, you know, the octagon, the cage, they started attending his church. And he led several of them to Christ. And so they became Christians. And so he became friends with them. He would go to their UFC gym and watch them as they trained. They ended up inviting him out to Vegas to a couple fights. And so he would go out there with them. And they had a mutual friend that was in the gym, a guy by the name of Elliot. Elliot used to fight in the UFC. Now he was a jiu-jitsu trainer. And they kept saying to Scott, man, you really need to meet Elliot because Elliot is very, very bright. He's an intellectual, loves to read, but he's a very skeptical atheist. And we would love to get you two together. I bet they would, right? And just to see the fireworks go, put them in the octagon, right? And so Scott keeps hearing about this skeptical atheist named Elliot. Elliot keeps hearing about this, pastor. And so they end up in Vegas at one of the fights, and they're in the hotel lobby afterwards, and Elliot walks up to Scott and introduces himself. And Elliot loved to sort of He had a phrase that he loved to just throw out to people that he met for the first time that he would hear they're a Christian, just to get their response. So Elliot walks up to Scott and he goes, "Hey, Scott, my name's Elliot. Heard a lot about you. Good to meet you." Scott's like, "Hey, likewise, my name's Scott." And then Elliot says this. He looks at him and he goes, "Hey, Scott, you're a pastor. I'm an atheist. Am I going to hell when I die?" "Well, nice to meet you. You want to go get some ice cream?" Right? Like, what do you say after that? And the reason why Elliot would say that is because he knew, he loved watching Christians squirm. And he said they would either go all on the truth side, get all militant and angry and flushed in the face, or they would maybe go all the way to the love side and kind of, you know, back down. "Well, no, I don't know if it really, whatever." And so he says this to Scott, and I love Scott's response. Scott maintained his eye contact with him, and with all the compassion he could muster, Scott said, "Yes, but I'm not happy about it, and you don't have to." See, there's this guy named Jesus, and I'd love to introduce you to him. And Elliot would say, that response was unlike anything he'd ever heard. And he said, my respect level for Scott went way up, and it actually, those words launched an unlikely friendship between these two guys. They got their families together. They found out they really enjoyed hanging out together. They had a whole bunch of other stuff in common, but they disagreed with this thing about God. And so they actually started a podcast a few years ago called The Sinner and the Saint. And they talked about all kinds of issues. And Scott really modeled really, really well letting Elliot see his heart, but yet at the same time speaking truth. Here's the fifth one, is ask questions and avoid accusations. And it's really important to know that even though you're going to this other person to point some stuff out, you could miss something, right? You're not the judge and the jury. You're just a concerned friend. You could be wrong, and so you may not very well have all the information. Maybe you missed something. And so this is why you need to ask some questions and not make accusations. And just say, "Hey, man, like, I've been noticing this about your behavior, and I could be way off base here." And then just ask them the question and see what they say. Get as much information as you can. One of the things that I've discovered about people that do this really, really well in my life is that I've got friends that will confront me in such a subtle way that I don't even realize I'm being confronted. And so, like, I'll go to lunch with them, and we'll sit down in the booth, and we'll ask questions, and we'll be talking, and then I leave and head back to the office or whatever, and all of a sudden it dawns on me, I think they just confronted me. Like, they got in and out of my heart like a sneaky little ninja. Didn't even realize what they were doing. But they did it in such a way that I didn't feel demoralized. I didn't feel shamed. I didn't feel discouraged. But they still did it. And they did it by asking questions. They did it by showing me their heart. And here's the sixth and the last one, is just ask for feedback yourself. Not only for your own personal life, but ask for feedback on how you gave them feedback. And so it's like, "Hey, man, I know I just had a difficult conversation with you. How'd I do? Like, were you discouraged by that? Were you demoralized by that? Were you shamed by that? Because if you were, then I did it wrong, and I sincerely apologize, because that's not my intent." Oftentimes, whenever I have a hard conversation with somebody, heart rates elevate and emotions get involved. So one of the things I've learned to do, I had to learn to do this the hard way, is that after the conversation's over, I'll look back at the other person and say, "Man, I know that was hard to hear. Can you tell me what you think I just said? What did you just hear?" And let them articulate it back. And most of the time, they get something wrong. They get the tone wrong. They get a detail wrong. They miss something. And so it gives me a chance to then say, "Oh, man, I didn't mean for you to hear that, or I didn't mean for you to think that." And it gives you a chance to clarify. The other thing is just to say, "Hey, man, I know this has been a hard conversation. Let's get together in another week. After you've had some time to sleep on it, to pray about it, to think about it, let's have another conversation." So that way, we make sure that we can have things resolved. See, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11, it says, "So encourage each other and build each other up, just as you are already doing." The goal of healthy conflict is encouragement and building up. And if the person feels discouraged and torn down, we didn't do it right. So let me circle back to this question that I asked you just a few moments ago. Do you have someone in your life right now who could do this for you? And if the answer is no, that's okay. But would you begin to pray about it? Would you begin to seek out that relationship? When you find somebody that you love and trust, give them permission to speak into your life. See, the expectation is that we'll all grow to look more like Jesus, and you just can't do that on your own, in your own Bible reading, and in your own prayer closet. Those are elements of it, but eventually you got to invite somebody else in who's full of the Spirit, who can actually speak truth into your life. See, here's the deal. We're all sinners. We all make a mess of things. And so God sent Jesus to deal with the eternal consequences of our sin. And aren't you thankful he did that? Wow, the other campuses, I really need you to help me out because this room's really quiet, all right? Aren't you glad that God sent Jesus to deal with the eternal consequences of our sin? And so now, man, your identity is in him. Your identity isn't in your appearance. Your identity isn't in your performance. Your identity isn't in what other people say about you. Your identity isn't in your sexuality. It's in who Jesus is. And so now you're bulletproof. You can take whatever feedback people will give you, and it doesn't destroy you because your identity is based in Jesus. But God will still send people full of the Spirit to help you deal with the immediate consequences of your sin. And that's why we need healthy confrontation, so that we can all continue to grow. We are all in process, making progress. So let's invite him to do that. Father, we come to you right now, and I thank you for your love and your grace. The way that Jesus modeled this so well for us, we want to model it to others. So I pray that if there's somebody here right now that maybe this has not been done well in their lives, I pray that you would give them healing right now. I pray that if somebody's like, you know what, man, Aaron, I don't know. Like, you asked me if I've got anybody in my life who could speak into my life. I don't know who that person is. I pray that you would send someone. Maybe there's somebody here and they're like, oh, I got all kinds of people who want to speak truth into my life and I don't want to hear any of it. God, I pray that you would help them to be more receptive by giving them a healthy experience with it so that we might all learn and grow to be more and more like you. Thank you for these hard truths given in love. We ask that we could take it and apply it to our lives. And we ask this in Jesus' name. And the church says, amen.